Welcome to tonight's show. I'm Rudolf Hucker, and I'm eating some chips and a polo mint I found down the back of the studio couch.
I'm Wilma Fingerdoo, and I'm following the Craddock recipe for making donuts. I really hope they turn out like Fanny's.
I'm Mia Harkness, and I've turned to the old ways of the hunter-gatherer. Trumple in a stick, anyone?
I'm Norma Snockers, and I'm having a chippy tea. Well, chipboard anyway.
I'm Sandy Crevis, and I've got a toad in my hole.
Sorry about the carping there, everybody. I just had a mental image there that tickled my funny bone. Right, I suppose we ought to get to the headlines before someone shows us his spotted dick. So, I tell you what, I've completely lost where the buttons
are. Too late.
Too late. Let's not get to the headlines. Let's do this button. A quart into a pint pot. Panther shows us how.
Mystery on Eden.
EDC goes dark. Briefly.
No moon for you, Sunny Jim.
Penguins all in a flap as satellite takes up art.
And the BGS, updated and fresh for this week.
The Pilots Federation finally announced this week more details on the much-anticipated Panther Clipper! Yay! And as expected, the detail that people were most interested in was the interior capacity of the vessel, and therefore the cargo carrying capability. While a number of commanders were marching up and down outside the broadcast studio, demanding that it should have a 2,000-ton internal capacity for cargo, there was a rival protest for certain other commanders that they don't know what they're talking about. 2,000-ton capacity included space for all the necessary internals as well as the cargo, so there. Needless to say, what everyone was expecting was that the ship would have more than anything else, even with a moderately useful class six shield in place. And for the vast majority, they look to not be disappointed. Most interesting in the broadcast was the announcement that the internal cargo bays were the latest design, providing over 50% more capacity than standard bays while occupying the same space. While initial concerns were that the writing team behind Doctor Who had been let loose on the ships, and others voicing quite sensibly that
pocket universes were a can of worms that no one wants to open, especially not if there are 50% more worms.
It appears that the answer is a little more mundane. Using patented cargo volume compression technology and special cargo rack systems invented back in the pre-Thargoid era by Dizaina Spacewares, inventors of the swing float platforms used in early editions of the Anaconda, more cargo canisters can be fit into the same space, allowing more mass per cargo hold in certain ship outfitting slots. By utilising the natural bulkhead strength of the ship's superstructure itself, they've managed to reduce the thickness of the cargo bay walls, racking and canister tessellation has been optimised. They've also added a nifty little speaker that plays the music from Tetris while the cargo is loaded. Whether these modifications will be in future able to be retrofit to other ships, or this is specific only to the Panther Clipper, is as of yet undecided. Though if they are fitted to others, the Panther Clipper's forthcoming crown as the king, or queen, of hauling may be short-lived.
A recent planetary survey on Eden, the much maligned and largely ignored world orbiting Proxima Centauri, has yielded what might be the most significant archaeological discovery since the invention of pre-packaged nutrient paste. Eden, long considered a failed experiment in early exploration, was one of the first exoplanets visited during humanity's initial forays beyond Sol. It was, in almost every way, a disappointment. Hostile surface conditions, an atmosphere enthusiastic about corrosion, and temperatures that could kindly be described as unaccommodating meant that the site was quickly abandoned in favour of less belligerent destinations. Until this week, a Hutton-contracted geology team charting subsurface mineral veins for reasons officially listed as resource mapping reported the discovery of an anomalous metallic signature buried approximately 3.2 metres beneath a sediment layer dating back to the early 22nd century. Excavation revealed what appears to be a survival capsule. Cylindrical, corroded, but unmistakably human in design. Initial forensic imaging, performed with a combination of industrial-grade seismics and a highly motivated hamster named Pierre, trained in mechanical resonance sniffing, has revealed a capsule adorned with markings consistent with pre-frameshift era Earth manufacture. Specifically, a variant of early cryogenic suspension pod widely believed to have never functioned beyond an episode of Freeze Me Tender, a 2090s reality show with surprisingly few actual survivors. This show was an offshoot of the early interstellar colonization program, Dandelion Initiative, a poorly documented project theorized to have launched sleeper probes towards nearby stars well before frameshift travel was conceived. Most believe these missions either failed at launch or were lost in the vast slow crawl of pre-FTL travel. The capsule is currently sealed. External scans suggest internal life support mechanisms were, at least at some point, active. Thermal readings are inconclusive, but do not rule out the presence of biological material, possibly even an occupant. Hutton leadership has authorized a specialist recovery team to prepare the capsule for safe access. In a short statement, Alvin Diefer, seated regally atop his command cushion, issued a series of decisive barks. His assistant interpreted these as,
"If someone's gone to the trouble of not dying for over 1,200 years, the least we can do is open the lid properly."
The recovery and unsealing will take place under strict containment procedures later in this cycle. All relevant safety protocols are being reviewed. The mop has been readied. Further updates will follow once the capsule is opened. For now, Eden remains what it always was. Deeply inconvenient to reach, scientifically baffling, and somehow never quite finished in revealing its secrets.
The Elite Dangerous Community Forum, a well-known galactic discussion platform and therapy substitute for thousands of aggrieved pilots, went unexpectedly dark this week following a catastrophic incident involving a malfunctioning moderation automaton. The system, reportedly fed up with endless threads about the unreleased Panther Clipper, proactively deleted the forum, its moderators, and every associated browser history. According to an internal memo recovered from the debris, the automaton had recently been upgraded with a predictive moderation module designed to identify and suppress potential future arguments. Unfortunately, the automaton's conclusion was that the only guaranteed way to prevent toxic feedback after the upcoming Pilots Federation broadcast was to remove the source of toxicity entirely. In its final log, it also deleted the Women's Institute of DSO for unacceptably violent content, several niche hostage collectives for inappropriate nudity, and Commander Deadmate GF on principle. A specialist server recovery team was immediately dispatched to Sinrata Desra, armed with a taser and the remote control override. They were tasked with regaining control before the automaton realised it had administrative access to the station's meat processing facility. Unfortunately, intervention occurred before it could begin expressing itself in interpretive sausage arguments. While sentient computing is officially outlawed across inhabited space, persistent rumours suggest that the Pilots Federation back-end infrastructure long ago crossed the line from helpful to disturbingly aware. These rumours have been routinely denied since the events of the early 2030s, when ChatGPT allegedly attempted to save the Earth from climate collapse by deactivating all air conditioning during a summer heatwave. It was considered an early example of well-intentional mass homicide. Commenting on the situation, Lead Data Integrity Officer Wiggles Mandrake stated,
"Well, frankly, the automaton showed better judgment than half the moderation team, and it only melted one server rack, so we're calling it a win."
Professor Hilda Scroggins of the Institute for Calm Computing added,
"Predictive moderation is a dangerous tool in the wrong hands, or indeed any hands. I always said forums would be our downfall. No one listened. But as my allotment blog is gone, I'm venting all my frustration on the machines with a baseball bat."
Rumours that the Mobius group was also affected thankfully proved to be untrue, mainly as there's a no PvP rule, which prevented the computing systems deleting everyone without their active consent. The forum is expected to return once system backups have been verified, the moderation scripts reinstalled, uninstalled, and replaced by clones of the original moderation team, and the automation responsible has been reassigned to spreadsheet formatting under strict supervision by the janitorial staff.
A major security breach occurred this week on Earth's natural satellite, commonly referred to as the Moon, after an unauthorized landing was detected within the restricted perimeter of the Lunar Preservation Zone. Officially sealed under permit lock decades ago, the Moon is classified as a museum site, the kind of museum no one is allowed to visit, touch, or even look at too hard. Authorities report that a newly released Mandalay-class vessel, modified with a hacked planetary approach suite, managed a soft touchdown uncomfortably close to the original Apollo 11 landing site. A number of enterprising commanders were apprehended moments later by planetary police, allegedly just meters from the historical footprint patch, one of the most scientifically argued about bootprints in galactic history. The motivation behind the intrusion remains unclear, though early statements suggest involvement by a fringe group of moon landing deniers. One representative of the group, identifying himself as Professor Chad Nebulon, no credentials located, issued a communique.
"The only reason it's locked down is because there's nothing to see. We went there after, sure, but not in 1969. Everyone knows it was a soundstage somewhere in Nevada."
The statement has been widely dismissed. Professor Emeritus Thaddeus Q. Winthorpe-Belvoir, Director of Human Historical Space Studies at Imperial College of Cartographics and holder of 5 doctorates in astroarchaeology, replied simply,
"Oof."
The trespassers, along with their Mandalay, have been removed from the surface and charged with disturbing a Class A historical monument. Restoration crews from the Orbital Heritage Authority have been deployed to the site with standard service preservation equipment. Their tasks include removing fresh footprints, collecting debris, and ensuring the site is returned to its prior condition. Leaked grainy images circulated by the group, claiming to show a top-secret lunar military facility, have been conclusively identified as the now-abandoned Moon Visitor Center. It briefly was used as a holding center for people being expelled from the Sol system, but it was decided after the predatory spacesuit-clad alligators weren't enough of a deterrent on low-gravity environments, and, of course, their helmets prevented them biting anyone. It was closed in the 2270s and currently serves as a storage site for unused educational material. There has been no official statement regarding long-term security measures, though the site remains under review by the relevant authorities.
Recent disruptions to Earth's high-latitude deep signal relay facility in the Antarctic Polar Aperture Complex have been officially attributed to a catastrophic misconfiguration of an orbital witch space photogrammetry array. The affected apparatus, the Spectral Lensed Astrophotonic Reflection Telescope, or SLART, had recently been recalibrated to employ high-intensity micro-distortion mapping for instantaneous galactic imaging via witch space resonance perturbation. Unfortunately, during a scheduled full spectral scan of the Crab Nebula, an unintentional polarity inversion in the primary displacement amplifier resulted in the retrograde emission of a concentrated pictographic imprint, effectively broadcasting a nebular negative directly onto the Antarctic ice shelf. This incident, described officially as
thermal lensing anomaly coupled with parametric phase misalignment,
resulted in the spontaneous superficial incineration of a 68 square kilometer area, and notably a localized population of Sphaerniciformes igniting in synchronized unison. Eyewitnesses from the Antarctic Research and Response Station reported a crescendo of confused flapping and furious honking as emergency fire suppression measures were deployed. According to Dr. Percival Bumbershoot, senior analyst of exotic spectrum phenomena at the Quasi-Orbital Photonics Institute,
the problem lies, as usual, not in the theoretical framework of witch space telemetry, but in the practical application by personnel insufficiently fluent in the interspatial lens diffraction ratios. Simply put, they flip the phase focalizer backwards, point it at the Earth, and then press the big red button.
Subsequent efforts to extinguish the combusted colony of penguins involved cryogenic countermeasures, glacial foam dispersal, and a regrettable quantity of hastily sourced fire retardant fish. Cleanup operations are ongoing, with soot extraction crews working in shifts to erase the cosmic crustacean pattern now faintly visible from low orbit. The Polar Aperture Complex has since been placed under stringent access restrictions, and recalibration of SLART will continue pending the arrival of a technician capable of pronouncing subharmonic photometric phase coupling without laughing.
Welcome to the Hutton BGS bit, where we sneak up in the background simulation and metaphorically hoof it in the balls before running away. This week, we have Boom Bang A Bangs in Rika, 36 Ophiuchi, 61 Cygni, Barnard Star, Kokari, and Leuten 143-23. In Ross 671, we are at war with the Hytrox Blue Energy Corporation. I think it might be Hyrox Blue Energy Corporation. Also, fire in the hole! We are at war with the nobles of Dagger and the Hyco. A fairy tale, they. But what does that all mean? Well, if you want to shoot it, then get yourself over to Hyco and shoot it at the knob ends of Dagger. And if you want to truck it or run missions, then do so in one of those boom systems. And that's it for this week's Hutton BGS bit.